Craig.
Hey, what's up,
Craig?
Craig, baby, welcome back. It's episode 69. Hey, everybody, welcome to the most boring week of football.
That's 69. It's perfect.
Yeah. Actually, it's not that boring. I enjoy the Pro Bowl, and they got the NHL stuff going on. So it's actually not that too boring of a week. But
basketball season's getting good.
Yeah, a bunch of college basketball games today. NBA's in the middle of the season. As me and Tony were just talking about, like, I got my bankroll boosted up a lot this week betting on NBA. So I have a bunch of money for Super Bowl betting now.
Yeah, we're going to talk. I have one Super Bowl bet I want to talk about briefly.
Before yeah, we can look at the sports book and go through and look at some stuff. Sure.
Yeah. So let's talk, though, about 69. Tell me about, do you have a guy? Do you have multiple dudes?
I got two guys this week. Okay. So I'll start.
Okay.
Let's go with someone who's retired in 2000. This guy, who we're about to talk about, actually has a connection to Mark Adikas, who was who we talked about in a previous episode. He didn't have that great of a playing career, but he went on to be like one of the great like orthopedic surgeons of sports medicine.
That's the guy. Isn't that the guy that like walked out of the hospital to go play?
No. That wasn't Adikas. That was a couple episodes. That was okay. A different guy.
Okay.
That was the flu guy who was in for the flu.
That's right. Yeah.
So we're gonna talk about really quick, Mark Sclareth.
Oh, Stink.
Yeah. Played for 12 seasons with the Washington Redskins and the Broncos from 89 to 2000.
Yeah.
As I said, he has a connection to Mark Adikas because Sclareth, during his career, had 29 knee surgeries.
Holy shit.
I don't know if any of them were done by Mark Adikas, but he was featured on Mark Adikas's sports medicine show, who I mentioned in the earlier episode.
Yeah.
And said that his knees were one of the worst that they had ever seen. He had 15 surgeries alone just on his left knee and 5 on his right, along with 9 other random surgeries. Said he had a great pain threshold, but like I said, it was one of the worst knees that they've ever seen.
That's terrifying.
So I don't know how he played for 11 seasons, but he did.
Drugs.
Yeah, probably. Like I said, he retired in 2000, and he helped the Broncos win a Super Bowl.
He did.
Super Bowl 32.
The one with Elway doing his little jump, cartwheeling over the Packers.
Over the Packers, yeah.
Terrell Davis, underrated.
But yeah, I just thought it was cool that Sclareth's got a connection to one of the players that we talked about before.
Stink. And Terrell Davis, I'd like to clarify, as a Hall of Famer, is also underrated. Because can you imagine the numbers his career would have had if he didn't get hurt? Like,
yeah, right.
Bonkers. All right, so I got a good one for you, Ryan. And I let my ADHD run a little wild with me. Let's take this journey, okay?
Okay. I'm ready. All right, let me get my popcorn.
All right, here we go. I'm going to talk about a 69-yard touchdown that we all know and love, but we're going to focus on one specific part, and I want your opinion on it. So before we get to the conversation, I want to talk about the play.
Okay.
You know it. 7 seconds to go, Miami down 5. Tannehill dumps it off to Kenny Stills, who tosses to Devontae Parker, who then tosses it to Kenyon Drake, who not only still has space, but he capitalizes on the Patriots defense, who are clearly looking to stop the next pitch. He weaves in, then back out to the outside towards the sidelines to score, and giving the Dolphins an absolutely batshit wild ending and a victory over New England.
Hell yeah.
I'm pretty sure we watched that play together, as a matter of fact.
I think so.
The Miami Miracle is one of the best finishes that I can think of in the last, handful of years.
Yeah.
And it's a huge moment because if anybody here, you watch football, I'm assuming, you hear the play-by-play of that touchdown on commercials.
Yeah.
And the thing about that commercial, though, is it's missing one big moment. And I'd argue that that moment is not only why the play worked, but it speaks to a larger debate that I'm going to ask your opinion on. The line in the, that's not in the commercial is delivered by Ian Eagle, who, by the way, Ian Eagle is one of the best play-by-play guys in the NFL. He says, Gronkowski doesn't have the angle. Oh, and that's no. Right before Kenyon Drake scores. Gronk was lined up near the end zone to knock down a potential Hail Mary pass. And when the ball was thrown short, like, he's exposed because he's not a defender, right?
Yeah.
And he gets sucked in, and when Drake kicks it back out, he doesn't have the angle, and Drake gets into the end zone. It's not Gronk's fault. He's not a defender, you know?
Yeah.
So this got me to thinking. And I was thinking about offensive players being put in on Hail Mary plays to knock the ball down. I tried, dude. I looked forever. I was trying to find a list of wide receivers that had been put back into coverage on Hail Marys, and I couldn't find it. I wish that exists somewhere. So instead of that list, I have some highlights.
What do you got?
All right. As far as I could find, Julio Jones is the most recent wide receiver with a Hail Mary interception in the playoffs, where he picked off Russ Wilson to seal an NFC divisional game in 2012.
I feel like I remember that.
Randy Moss and Keyshawn Johnson have interceptions on Hail Marys, and so do Keenan Allen and Mike Williams.
Really?
Yep. Keenan Allen ran his back like 40 yards, too. So I have no idea what it is about Bill Belichick in doing this, but like I mentioned, Randy Moss has a pick. Gronk was in on that play, and Patriots receiver slash occasional defensive back Troy Brown is the receiver with the most interceptions after the AFL-NFL merger with 3.
Damn.
This one only kind of counts because he played on more than just Hail Marys, but like it's a trend with Belichick that I noticed. So let me ask you the question that I've been dying to ask you since Tuesday when I did all this research. Is it a good or bad idea to put a wide receiver or tight end in the defensive backfield to defend against a Hail Mary? Explain your answer.
I don't think it's a bad idea as long as that player is not like injury prone. I mean, I guess it's a bad idea like to put Julio Jones, but if Julio says, "Hey, I want to go out there and do it," let him. I mean, why not?
I wonder, like, okay, Randy Moss makes perfect sense to me, right? Because he's the greatest jump ball receiver in the history of football.
Yeah.
But, like, if the Bears put out Cole Kmet, you'd be like, no.
No.
If the Vikings put out Justin Jefferson, I'd be like, no.
Yeah, probably
because not. Justin Jefferson's amazing, but, like, the reason you put the guy back there is because he's your tallest guy.
Yeah, that's true.
It's not about jumping technique, really. It's just about, like, is this guy tall enough to knock the ball away from a large group of people?
Be cool to see Kyle Pitts.
I don't doubt that. You could totally see a Kyle Pitts or a Drake London doing that for sure. So I wanted your opinion. I think that it could go either way as well. I like the idea only of a tall guy. I don't think you got to be 100% sure they're throwing a Hail Mary, because if it's one of those pitch plays, you might get screwed.
Yeah, it's got to be someone that's 6'5 or taller.
All right, so I want to end with this small, fun little tidbit. Remember Aaron Rodgers to Richard Rodgers Hail Mary against the Lions?
Yeah, yeah.
That is the longest completed pass by air yards in NFL history.
For real?
It left his hand at the 35 and was caught 4 yards deep into the end zone, which makes it a 69-yard pass through the air.
Yeah, I guess for air yards, yeah.
Yep.
I didn't realize that was... I always just figured there was one that was longer.
But the longest air yard pass of all time is a Baker Mayfield Hail Mary that went over through the back of the end zone. It was 70 and a half yards from hand to spot land it landed.
Damn.
Yeah. So that is my number 69, the Miami Miracle.
Hell yeah. Let's round it out with... someone who studied music in school, just like me.
Okay.
Actually was never going to be a football player unless it was for one of his friends that pulled him into the football scene. Let's talk about Mr. Chester Pitts.
Okay.
All right. So he played college at San Diego State, and he was part of a famous NFL Super Bowl ad commercial during Super Bowl, what is this, 27?
Okay.
But let's start. So early on in his career, he attended the California Academy of Mathematics in Carson, California.
Okay.
He was going more for a, you know, scholarly career. But that school did not have a football program, so he competed in shot put and discus and track and field and stuff like that.
Nice.
And set, like, several school records because he was just a great athlete. When he was working at a supermarket when he met Ephraim Salam, further down the road teammate of his, and he convinced him to join San Diego State, and he made it as a walk-on.
Damn.
As a guard. It says, upon dominating future Pro Bowler Kabir Gabaja Balamila.
Yeah, KGB.
Yeah. In practice, he was awarded a scholarship.
Wow.
As a sophomore, he saw action in 9 games and graded out at a 97% for blocking consistency.
Wow.
And made 60 knockdown blocks and only allowed 1 sack throughout his sophomore season.
Very nice.
He played in San Diego State for 2 seasons before being drafted by the Houston Texans in the 2nd round.
Okay.
So as I said, he was going for more of a scholarly career early on in his academia.
Yeah.
He was actually a really good oboist. He played the oboe in wind ensemble and orchestra. So during the Super Bowl, there was a commercial starring Pitts and his former Texans teammate Ephraim Salam. In it, Pitts and Salam reminisce about Salam discovering Pitts at the grocery store thing, like how he just saw this big guy and was like, why isn't this guy playing football?
Sure.
Bagging groceries. During that commercial, I guess, part of the music was Bach's Brandenburg Concerto number 2.
Okay.
Pitts played it for the commercial.
Fuck yeah.
So he still kept his music alive while he was going through the NFL.
And he got paid twice.
I thought that was so cool. Like,
that's sick.
When I read that he was a former oboist, I'm like, this guy's like 330 pounds and he's playing an instrument that probably looks like it's the size of like a pretzel stick in his hand.
He probably has bonkers lung capacity.
Yeah, probably.
That's sick.
But yeah, he's played for the Houston Texans. He started every game during his first 8 seasons, either at left or guard or left tackle.
Damn.
He had an injury in his last season with the Texans, only played in 2 games. Yeah, it was a microfracture, something with his knee.
Okay.
Then he went on to sign with Seattle as a free agent, but was not able to recover from that knee surgery. So he eventually retired, and Houston did the right thing and signed him to a 1-day contract so he could retire as a Texan.
Kick ass.
But that's former NFL player and oboist extreme, Chester Pitts.
Chester Pitts. We've had Terry Crews and his art. We've got Chester Pitts and his music.
Yeah, it was one of those rags to riches stories. I thought it was cool, you know, like his teammate was like, hey, why isn't this guy playing football while he's seeing him bag groceries at the supermarket while he's going to California science and mathematics school, you know?
Right. Okay, so well, you are the man with the music degree. What kind of pieces do you like in an oboe?
I mean, Bach's got a lot. So like that Brandenburg Concerto number 2 that he played is pretty famous. You'd know it if you heard it.
Sure.
The oboe is actually really cool in a lot of older orchestral music, especially stuff from like the Romantic era where it was like a lot of stuff out of Russia and it was more somber and depressing. There's a lot of good oboe solos in there. So yeah, if you want to check out some Rachmaninoff,
Sure.
Or Dvorak.
Dvorak's the champ.
Some really, like, I mean, it was a depressing time for Russia in terms of communism, but I think it was one of the greatest times for, like, music coming out of that era, because there was a lot of emotion.
Well, the Romantic era was pre-communism. The Romantic era is the 1800s, right?
Yeah. Oh, was it pre-communism? It was still...
Communism is 1918.
Okay. The people were still being exploited.
Russian feudalism was fucking awful.
Yeah.
And so
there was just a lot of emotion and being put into that music during the Romantic era. Yeah.
Do you think that, like, okay, so if he's a fan of the Romantic era, like Russian era, Romantic era, do you think if you played him The Rites of Spring, he'd get really pissed off?
Probably not. He probably enjoys it. Anyone that enjoys classical music loves The Rites of Spring.
Well, like, but, you know, the Rites of Spring riots, the people that were pissed weren't, like, you know, the snooty upper class. They were the artists. They were, like, because it had such a break with tradition, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, but because that was coming out, they were coming out of the classical Baroque era where everything was, you know, had to be approved by, like, the Pope. You know, like,
right,
stuff like that. Like, if you were a classical composer, like, you had to present your stuff before the king or like a religious figure,
right,
to get like approval before you could even play it in public, you know?
Yeah.
And that the Rites of Spring was something that was like, fuck you, dad, we're doing whatever we want, you know? Like,
right, totally, yeah. Totally. So, let's take a break. And listen to these messages from, I'm sure, the Russian Orthodox Church. And we'll be back in a few to talk Pro Bowl.
Coming this summer from TH Fantasy Tabletop Gaming Industries, it's Fantasy 5e. Hark, weary traveler, what brings you to the inn? Are you on a journey looking for a new collaborative adventure game to fill the void now that Dungeons & Dragons is selling out? Are you just as interested in slaying orcs as you are finding the next breakout wide receiver? Well, my friend, you've come to the right place. Join Fantasy 5e, where you can pick your character build from a plethora of options. Will you be the halfling wide receiver with a dark past? The dragonborn quarterback from Ohio State? Maybe the gnome at tight end throwing blocks and running routes with dark vision? The options are limitless with Fantasy 5e. We crowdsource our games, so you're always able to choose an adventure you'd most like to play through. We have everything. You and your team could fight to overthrow Urban Meyer in our 2021 Jaguars expansion pack, or win the Super Bowl with the 2023 Detroit Lions using DLC that I'm not sure exists yet. Head to the website and enter code Jamal Williams to get 20% off your first fantasy magazine, DM guide, and an additional $10 in free bets on the TH Fantasy Sportsbook.
And we're back.
We're back just in time for the Pro Bowl. There's a good chance that this doesn't come out before the Pro Bowl. I don't know what's going on. I know something is up with Jeff Crisco's family, so I don't know if this is getting posted anytime soon, but really what's important is the health of Jeff and his family, so let's hope for the best for that. So and these are loose predictions anyways, just about the Pro Bowl. We don't know who's competing where.
Yeah, it'll be just some broad analysis of what we think is going to go on.
I couldn't even find a recording of night one.
Really?
Like, I couldn't watch it when it was on. I was so pissed.
It had to have been on a major network, right?
I didn't see it, and it might have just been me being stupid. But so we've got a couple. We don't know who's playing in what, so let's just wing it, Ryan. Do you have the list of who's the receivers are for these teams?
Let's see.
Because I want to know, who do you think has the advantage in the best catch competition, AFC or NFC?
Well, let's look at AFC. We got Tyreek, we got Stephon Diggs, we got Jamar Chase, we got Devontae. NFC, we got Justin Jefferson, AJ Brown, CD Lamb.
Well, AJ's not playing because he's in the
Super Bowl. Yeah. We got Terry McLaurin, and then Amon-Ra's replacing AJ.
Yep.
I think AFC's got the advantage.
Really?
Yeah, I think Chase or Tyreek's got a chance to make a really good catch. And what do they even do? Do they just throw up a 60-yard bomb and you gotta like? I don't understand like how they judge it, you know?
Okay, so The way that the first catch competition works is there's two separate like competitions, and it's over 2 days. So two players from the AFC and the NFC will compete for the first round on Thursday at various spots in Las Vegas. The competitors will attempt to show off their best receptions. This will be pre-recorded and air on Thursday. The first round catches will then be voted on by fans to determine the finalists for Sunday's competition. In the finals, the remaining two players will compete in front of judges and be graded on their best catches.
So yeah, I'm guessing like they're going to try and do like one-handed catches. Like, I just don't understand how they're, because it's got to be a standard thing for everyone, right? Because a quarterback standing at the 25-yard line and just throwing a post into the end zone to see if like they can get their 2 feet in, or
I'm thinking it's going to be more like the slam dunk contest where you know, you have a teammate come out and throw a ball where you want it to go.
Okay.
So
it can be open to anything. It doesn't have to be a standard thing for each player.
Right. So here's what we're going to do. We are going to pause the podcast and we're going to watch these, because I found, Ryan, I found the videos, and we'll watch them together. So when we come back, we'll have an idea of who's going to go to the finals. And we're back. All right. We just watched four entries for the best catch. We watched Amon-Ra St. Brown jumping into the pool. We watched Stephon Diggs relaxing in the pool. We watched Patrick Surtain on the zip line, and we watched Justin Jefferson at the Eiffel Tower. Ryan, who are your top two?
The Eiffel Tower, and I think Diggs, because of the last catch he caught with his legs was cool.
Yeah, Diggs caught one in each hand and then one between his legs. That was pretty nasty.
He was just like sitting on a pool floaty, like relaxing, and just kind of like put up one hand and caught it, put up the other hand and caught it, and then caught the other ball with his legs.
I'm also going Jefferson and Diggs, but dude, I love that Amon-Ra front flip catch into the pool. That was pretty nice.
It was pretty good.
But yeah, I think we're, so now that we've seen their trick shots, I'm assuming they're going to have regular quarterback play. So Ryan, who's going to make the better catch? Is it going to be Justin Jefferson or is it going to be Stephon Diggs?
Probably Diggs.
I am going to go Jefferson. And so we'll see what happens.
All right. We'll put I'll bet you a quarter.
Sold. All right. So let's only talk about one more, because this is the only one we're going to know for sure. Who's okay. In. We are going to talk kick-tack-toe.
Ooh.
They are going to play tic-tac-toe. They're going to try to either complete a line or fill five squares to win. They're playing a game of tic-tac-toe, kicking and punting. So the AFC kickers and punters are Justin Tucker and AJ Cole from the Raiders.
Yep.
Who's playing at home. The NFC punter Tress Way from Washington and Jason Myers from Seattle is the kicker. Ryan, okay. Is there any way that the NFC can overcome Hurricane Tucker?
No, Tucker's going to win it. He's going to win it. He's the best kicker in football.
I want to see the NFC win, but it's because of Tress Way of Washington. Tress Way was an undrafted Bears guy. He was a guy that really? They didn't. Yeah, they kept. God, I forget who they kept, but like Tress Way was a guy that would kick for them in a preseason 1 year.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Did not know that.
So we are betting on AFC, NFC, kick-tack-toe, 25-cent stakes, big time, one unit. So let's talk. We're going to talk a little bit of Super Bowl stuff real quick. Game's not till next week.
Right.
But you can't keep the degenerates away for very long. So
that's right.
Can we talk a little bit about the line where it stands?
Which one?
So all of it. So the Kansas City are 1.5-point dogs, and they have a plus 102 on the money line. Right now, the line's 50.5.
Yeah.
Is there anything that jumps out to you?
I think this could be one of the best Super Bowls we've seen in a while.
For sure.
So I really like the over right now. Now we'll see what happens with any injuries during the week, but it seems like everyone's going to be really healthy. I think I'm going to bet the over on this game because I think it could be like, you know, 31 to 28 or something like that, or even more.
Sure.
I mean,
there. Okay. So where would you put the odds on a Kansas City win?
Honestly, I think the odds that the way they have them right now, Philly minus 120 and Kansas City plus 102, I think those should be reversed. So I think Kansas City, and we'll see how the money goes during the week because it could get reversed anyway because it's so close right now. But Kansas City, they're just a force to be reckoned with.
So I kind of feel the same way as you, all right? The question is, can Kansas City put points up? Because if it's a track meet, I think it favors Kansas City. So there's a if you're feeling the same way I'm feeling, if you look at the Super Bowl MVP odds, Mahomes and Hurts are both plus 130, but Travis Kelce is plus 1600.
Right.
Is there a way that Kansas City wins this game and Travis Kelce doesn't score two touchdowns? You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true. You know what I did hear earlier? Just a random fact earlier this week. They said that, I think this was Wednesday or Thursday, they were saying the most money right now being bet on an MVP was on Kenneth Gainwell.
Really?
Yeah. He's plus 13,000.
I mean,
a dollar to win $130.
Let's just go ahead and do that right now.
Obviously, it has to do with the best odds, you know, right, to win something. But they said in Vegas right now, more money had been bet on Kenneth Gainwell than any other player for the MVP so far. That's going to change as we get closer to next weekend. But
I just put a dollar down on that. That's nuts.
Why not?
Yeah. What are you going to do? We can't even make a collect call for that.
Right. And Kenneth Gainwell's actually been playing pretty well the last couple playoff games.
I agree. I also think, though, that that's game script dependent. Like, they whooped ass in both of their other playoff games.
Right.
So.
But look, man, if Philly wins the game and Kenneth Gainwell gets two touchdowns, like, he's going to be the MVP. He's going to be the MVP.
Possibility.
Unless Hurts gets like two touchdowns, but.
Right. Well, so next week, we're actually going to go back to Gambletown, Democratic People's Republic of Gambletown, and do our Super Bowl spectacular. So if you're on Twitch, you should be on the lookout for that on Saturday before the Super Bowl. We'll see what we can do. I'm excited, man. I'm going to do some research. We'll get bets going. It'll be wonderful.
Yeah, I'm going to look at a bunch of stuff throughout the week.
But I feel like I'm not betting on anything this early. I'm not putting any real stakes on anything this early because too much can change between now and Sunday. So,
some perspective lines. Kelce for two touchdowns is plus 440 right now. Hurts is plus 550. I like those ones. AJ Brown, 650. I could see that, especially if Kansas City gets out to the lead. And actually, I hope that's how like the game script goes, or like Kansas City puts up two quick touchdowns and then Hurts got to throw to Brown, like, and then come back. That would be such an awesome game to see.
Damn, there's a prop here. Will the final score have occurred as a past Super Bowl final score? Like another game ended
31-28.
Yes is plus 470.
Well, I mean, there's what? How many Super Bowls have there been?
53, 54.
So that's a lot of data to pull from, and I could see easily being a score or something the same.
Yeah. I'm not putting a ton of money on it, but there you go.
Here's a good one. Any player to have a 60-plus yard reception, plus 300. I think that's a possibility, especially with Mahomes.
They have most net yards in the game, first offensive play of the game, either team to score on their first offensive play. Ooh. Will the last play of the game be a quarterback kneel?
Here's one for you, Tony. Okay. Big man touchdown. Any offensive lineman to score a touchdown.
I mean,
plus 3,500.
Oh man, there are so many props. I wish they had this for every game.
Right.
All right. Well, let's end it here so that we can, you know, put in our work towards next season and next next week. I've been doing a lot of prospect scouting and stuff like that, so we're gonna have a lot to talk about coming up. Maybe even do some team recaps. Probably be a good idea.
Yeah, we can do that for the first few episodes outside of the Super Bowl. Yeah.
Yeah. So we can
go back and look at some stuff we liked and
stuff do the best we can.
Surprised us. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll see y'all for episode 70. Thanks for sticking around for episode 69. For Ryan, I'm Tony. For Craig, that's Tony.
Everyone enjoy Pro Bowl.
Yeah, do your Pro Bowl, and then like we'll talk to you next week before the Super Bowl. Have a great week.
Happy episode 69, everybody.
Nice.
Fuck you, Dad.